It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Morning. You're right. Oh, what, me? Yeah. No, I'm all good, yeah? Yeah, no, fine. Hope you had a good day yesterday. It is now another day, another dollar. 1 minute past eight, ever so slightly late this morning, 1 minute past eight in the AM British summertime on Tuesday, the 4th of August. In the year of our Lord, 2026. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, good sir?
Morning. Yeah, I'm all good.
Okay. And with no more faffing about, there's plenty of fannying about, let's introduce my guest. I've got a guest this morning. It's only one Mr. Harrison Pitt of Restore Britain fame. How are you, sir?
Morning, both. Good to be with you at last on this show.
Yeah. Are you all right? Bright and early?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Yeah, I've got my coffee, got my water. It's nice and warm. We can, feeling fairly upbeat.
Good, excellent. All right. Well, let's have a look at everything that's in the news today in the legacy corporate lamestream media. What are the front pages on Fleet Street? And let's talk about it. All right, we've got cop killers will go free. And Farage's sinking ship. The tabloids don't pull any punches, do they? Some of them have got worse Nigel derangement syndrome than I have. All right, first of all then, the Sun. Rod Liddell died. Did you see that? Did you hear about that?
I did see that, yes. That was sad and unexpected.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I quite liked Rod Liddell. I didn't know he was ill. I don't think anyone really did they? But apparently he had a short illness. And yeah. And he's gone.
Yes,
it's a shame. I quite liked Rod Liddell. So go ahead.
I did too. He's a very, very witty sort of satirical commentator. Definitely added to the gaiety of the nation. And yes, it's a loss.
Yeah, there's a few people sort of in sort of the Rod Liddell adjacent sphere, right? People that are sort of right of centre and sort of, you know, patriotic and sort of moan about madness, how political correctness has gone mad, that whole sort of thing. But they're still kind of a little bit milquetoast for someone like me, say. but out of that lot, Rod Liddell, I thought, was one of the best ones. You know, you got people that are a bit, I think phony, like Julia Brewer Hartley or something like that. I don't buy it. I don't buy their shtick, you know what I mean? But Rod Liddell, I thought, was one of the good ones. So, yeah, a shame. All right, something about Ariana Grande. We don't care. She's far too slim. Have some food, love. Have a bit of cake. Cop killers. Right, serious story. Cop killers. Despite Prime Minister's review, cop killers will go free. It's obviously a story about two specific cop killers who dragged that dude behind a car. I mean, unintentionally, not that that matters. They didn't, like, deliberately do that, but nonetheless, responsible for his death. They got 13 years in prison, and they've served half, and they're going to be let out. And even though No Stern and Burnham said he would review that, they're still just getting it out, and his widow and his mum have said it's sort of disgusting and wrong and everything. What's your thoughts and feelings about the early release scheme, and what would Restore do? What's their sort of policies on that kind of thing?
Well, of course, the whole pretext for the whole public pretext, at least for the early release scheme, is that we face a chronic shortage of spaces in our prison system and that we need to relieve pressure on that system. Labour will, of course, want to point to the ways in which the Conservatives underfunded prisons. There probably actually is some truth to that. Funding for prisons isn't exactly a very popular policy for any government to embark upon. Government, it tends to be easier for governments in a mass democracy to go for to fund our prison system on the cheap. So there probably is some truth to that claim on the part of Labour. All I would say is that Labour are forbidden by their own political correctness from pursuing more practical solutions, more in the national interest of this problem. For instance, if there is a serious problem of prison overcrowding, as no doubt there probably is at the moment, and you're going to have to embark on some forms of early release, why not release and then deport the 10,000 foreign nationals we have across our prisons? That's 12% of our prison population in England and Wales that consists of foreign nationals. That's before you even get to the number who must be dual nationals. I don't know what that figure is. I don't even know whether we have that data. Then there is also the fact that there tends to be a sort of general taboo on the left, doesn't there, Bo, against any forms of generalization, like noticing general differences between groups. But sometimes in order to pursue practical policies, you need to pay attention to these general patterns. Then they don't have to be universal patterns, but just general patterns. So for instance, some of the research done by Anthony Daniels, who actually has experience working as a prison psychiatrist, shows that after the age of 38, no one is a recidivist anymore. It's almost as if once people turn 38, I don't know whether it's T levels dropping or whatever else it might be, but they just stop committing crime, even if they've been a serial criminal for you know, the earlier parts of their life. I would obviously, you know, there comes a point you can't just, I wouldn't release 39-year-old people just because they're over 38 if they're hardened criminals and murderers and pedophiles or whatever else it might be. Some people deserve that punishment, but you would also presumably, if you had to, want to prioritize early release for the kinds of age profiles of people least likely to reoffend. That tends to be fairly politically incorrect as well. They're not quite as politically incorrect as deporting foreign criminals.
No, absolutely. I said that just yesterday. I said exactly that yesterday. I say, when you get guys in their, well, you're saying in their 40s, I was saying in their 50s and 60s, but whatever. You get older guys and they're sort of, their crazy, wild life as a young man in their 20s and 30s, where they don't really seem to care all that much about the consequences for themselves, let alone other people. And when you're in middle-aged and older, that's just gone. It's sort of gone. Not with every single person, of course. Some people are sort of, you know, criminally insane or whatever. But for a lot of people, yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely right. That's what I would like to see in Bo's Britain. There'll be much longer custodial sentences for exactly that reason. No, you're like a, you're just a repeat offender doing violent crimes, relatively minor violent crimes, not necessarily a murderer. But you just keep doing assaults and stealing cars and breaking into homes. You know, we're going to whack you in prison until you're 45 or 50. That's what you get. Until that's broken out of you. Yeah, and as for the thing you said about if we've got such shortage of space, yeah, deport the thousands of foreign people, if not dual nationals, I would. Strip them away of the British part of their dual nationality and deport them as well. Yeah, absolutely. It seems like a no-brainer, doesn't it? But that's not what Labour want to do.
No, because they are, as I say, sort of forbidden a priori by their worldview from supposing any such policy to be sound or just. They're too ideologically blinkered to pursue that kind of policy, even though it would be unquestionably in Britain's national interest. And I'm guessing, I can't know for sure, but I'm guessing it must be, particularly if you were to exclude immigrant populations in this country from the sample. I would imagine that if you're polling the native British majority, that must be an 80-20 issue in favour. Must be close to that.
We'll see a few headlines later where it says that specifically rapists and paedophiles are going to be exempt from early release, but not necessarily killers. We'll get to it. Let's have a look at another front page. The Daily Telegraph, the Tory Graph. Oh, have you seen this story? I know it's only a banner, not the actual headline. Have you seen this guy, this Cambridge professor that was found to have not only plagiarised stuff in his PhD, but also just lied about loads of other things? The banner says, in the era of my truth, facts are not needed. But anyway, are you aware of the story of this guy?
Yes, I'm aware of, in broad outline of the story, but it's a story is that it's a story that sort of writes itself in the years after the BLM summer of 2020, isn't it? There must be countless examples that fit exactly this description, mustn't there?
Oh God, yeah. Every part of our society, from top to bottom, crowbarred in charlatans and freaks like this.
Yes.
Brilliant. Yes. I don't know. Feel free to just say I don't feel comfortable answering that question if this is a bit too personal. But you went to Oxford or Cambridge, didn't you?
I went to I did my undergraduate in literature at Durham, but then I switched to philosophy at Cambridge.
Oh, which college? I think I've asked you this before, but I've forgotten what you said.
It's Jesus College. I'm sorry to say.
No, why would you be? Isn't that one of the most eminent ones?
Because I think this fellow, this chap, had an association with Jesus College, and some sleuths have gone to work in the last 48 hours or so, and they've discovered that Jesus College rather surreptitiously edited their website to downgrade this. The status that this person had conferred on them by Jesus College, they changed it from something like professorial fellow, which sounds really grand, just to straightforward fellow. But yes, clearly you have lots of institutions. University of Glasgow is another one. I've now seen that there's some charity. I can't remember whether it's Care for Calais, but some charity with which this Jason Arde character was involved, who've also sort of been editing the past. Scrambling to edit the past.
Yeah. What a freak. I've always said, one of the things I hate most is lying. There's one thing to get something wrong in good faith. There's one thing to just deliberately lie. And I've said I hate it so much, only very, very small white liars are permissible in my world. Someone asks you if they've got a cute baby and it's not a cute baby. And you go, no, it is. Yeah, beautiful. Yeah, that's all right. Anything beyond that, like actually just making stuff up about your past and plagiarizing stuff. Oh, when that Matt Goodwin was caught, was he not, of plagiarizing things? That's just honestly gross. It's like, it's up there with like stealing for me. Okay, all right, let's move on. Very quickly, because it's not an important story in the scheme of the world. But this Afghan migrant who went on a small boat to Greece and then married some sort of, some woman that was to do with the refugee thing. And then he murdered some English woman and stuffed her in a suitcase. In fact, I think, is it the Sun? Yeah, they've got pictures of him. That's a suitcase with a body in it.
Yes.
Not a big deal in the scheme of things, the individual case of a murder, but it is all over. It is sort of a big thing in the news cycle today. So I don't know if you want to make any sort of comment on it, but.
Well, we should probably relate it to the question of Reform's recent offering, Operation Fortress, later, when we get around.
Yeah.
It's very germane to that, of course, and it's germane in particular to the sort of criticism that I would want to make of Reform's ostentatious announcement to that effect yesterday. I think, in a sentence, it is exactly that case that underscores for us the fact that this is a problem that originates in the Mediterranean, not in the English Channel. And I think I think that our efforts should be pan-European and focused there, rather than, I don't think that we should be indulging an admittedly irresistible urge to stick it to the French. I know that's a very tempting thing for English people to want to do. It's a sort of acceptable form of xenophobia in the post-war era. You're allowed to mock the French for being cowardly in 1940, even though the French have over centuries proved a very courageous and ingenious people. I regard this as sort of low IQ xenophobia, to which many boomers are prone. I would be in favour of a more sort of pan-European approach, perhaps British-led, in the Mediterranean for the interests of the continent as a whole, in a way that sustains our friendships with our European friends and partners, which seems to me to be much wiser than, straightforwardly violating their territorial integrity when they probably have more leverage than we do as it relates to goings on in the Channel.
Okay, that's interesting, sort of a pan-European thing, because there's a few specific islands in the Aegean Sea of Greece, aren't there, and some Italian islands in, well, I suppose, the Adriatic or whatever, that are like massive hotspots for this stuff. So, I mean, should we just... I'll just quickly say, Burnham's gone on holiday after just 2 weeks in the job. Don't worry, he's still in contact with his civil servants there in the Cabinet Office. Gone on holiday, cheeky so-and-so. All right, shall we get to... Well, let's, as soon as you brought it up, it was in the Mirror. Look at the Mirror. The Mirror's probably got the worst Reform derangement syndrome out of any of the papers. It's like worse than The Guardian, it seems to me. They go with hard right party in chaos. Like Reform, hard right party, Farage's sinking ship. That's their headline, front of centre. Reforms a Navy plan to halt the small boats torpedoed by experts. Lame bid. They think it's a lame bid to distract from poll woes and sleaze probes falls flat. Nigel's push to send Navy to stop small boats is ripped apart last night. And they mentioned that the French said it was violates their sovereignty. And various people in, Labour and Tories say it won't work. It's crazy. There was one of the papers front and centre had. It was about... Olukemi Badenoch, the Nigerian woman, the anchor baby, somehow finds herself LARPing as the leader of the opposition through some sort of insane fetish outgroup preference for the Tory party. She said... She launches a furious tirade, the Express characterised it as. A furious tirade against... That's the wrong thing. That's about Andy Burnham. She did also come out, though. Sorry. She did also come out and say about... And Chris Philp came out and said that Reform's plan was no good. Let's talk about that. You've already said then that you'd be interested in a sort of a broader, much broader idea and policy. But let's talk about the English Channel, though, specifically still, because that would still be part of it. What's your thoughts and feelings on Nigel's Operation Fortress and the idea of physically stopping the boats? You think it's a bit of an ostentatious bit of a gimmicky thing?
No, not physically stopping them as such. If by physically stopping them you mean bringing them into Britain or just off the coast of Britain or wherever, and slapping every single person aboard in handcuffs, detaining them, and then deporting them within 48 hours. There's nothing wrong with that. Apart from anything else, if you were to do that, given that these people spend inordinate amounts of money on getting across the channel, if they see footage of the people who decamped 2 weeks ago having cuffs slapped on them and being put on aeroplanes, they're not going to be spending that money anymore. So the boats would stop coming if you were to establish a credible deterrent.
Right. That's Restore Britain's policy, is a credible deterrent, i.e. that soon as they come here, they're put in detention and sent back straight away. And that's the deterrent to really break the back of the smuggling business.
That's right. Now, if France were a sort of low grade, backwater like Libya or even Morocco, frankly, then we would be able, as Britain, to exercise considerable diplomatic leverage over them, and probably could say, let's just say Libya was where France was. Heaven forbid. Although, to be fair, it doesn't make much difference these days, does it?
Well,
we could probably strong arm them, and the Royal Navy could sort of force itself into Tripoli or wherever else and drop them off. It's just France is a serious power. It is also a member of the European Union, and remember, it's a common EU border. So it's not just France as an individual power that would be able to, if it really was wanted to sort of follow through on not allowing British vessels to come into French ports and drop these people off. If it was really adamant and resistant to that, it wouldn't be only be able to react as France. It would be able to, use its own leverage within the EU to act as the EU in a way that penalizes. I don't think that we have the leverage to do that and to sort of strong arm France and effectively violate its territorial integrity in a way that we would have the power to do that with a country like Libya. I found it interesting that in the press conference, Farage compared what he wanted to do in Britain vis-a-vis France to what Australia did in Australia vis-a-vis Indonesia. But again, you can't really compare Indonesia to France in that way. Easier for the Aussies to strong arm the Indonesians than it is for the Britain to strong arm the French and by extension the EU. So I basically view that it's not interdicting them in the Channel that I regard as sort of just an ostentatious stunt. It's more the pretension that we are realistically going to be able to, upon doing that, strong arm France, take the vessels immediately to France and drop those immigrants off there. That to me is not realistic. And France,
well, let me play devil's advocate then, because Reform and Nigel and Zia would argue, they are arguing, that it's not like, I mean, it would be a military operation, but it wouldn't be infringing on France's sovereignty in any way, because they would characterise it as a rescue mission. And under the the auspices of some sort of rescue mission, that it's completely legal to enter French waters in order to rescue people and take them back to the beach. And if you call it that, insist that it's that, then you aren't breaking international law or French law or anything. What would you say to that? Well, what I would say is that
I'm not a stickler for international law, and nothing that I'm saying in criticism of reforms policy has anything to do with my desire to uphold certain interpretations of international law. So yes, that is one plausible interpretation of international law. The French are likely to see it another way. This is one of the problems with international law, is its systematic ambiguity. It simply furnishes states with shared text from which to quote and counterquote against each other. In many cases, it's not always super clear. And so, yes, international lawyers may disagree over whether reform are making the stronger case there, or on whether the French government is making the stronger case vis-a-vis international law. The point is that insofar as the French government believes in its case, it's likely to act accordingly and create problems. So I'm more concerned here about what this does for bilateral relations between Britain and France, and Britain, and by extension between Britain and Europe, than I am in international law. And it seems to me that given that this is a civilizational challenge that threatens the whole of Europe, including Britain, this century, we are going to need to cooperate, particularly as more and more base governments, God willing, rise to power on the continent. If we were to see an AfD government in Germany, and we were to see a Rassemblement National government in France, and
looks very likely, by the way, very, very likely at the moment.
Looks likely. That would be, I don't want to be, it would be so counterproductive for the first thing of a Restore Britain government, or an otherwise based British government, to anger and create problems for our relationship with France.
Fair enough. So, tell us what Restore Britain's policy would be then to stop the small boats, if not do a rescue mission to just Royal Marines to tow the dinghy straight back to a French beach, if not that. What is it?
Well, you can definitely make operational use of the Royal Navy. And I should say that at the moment, Henry Bolton, our sort of national security spokesperson, is working on a national security strategy that does include an operational plan for dealing with the problem in the channel itself, rather than just dealing with illegal immigration once it's already sort of a festering sore within our society, which is what our sort of mass deportations paper primarily worked to do in terms of establishing a hostile environment for illegal immigrants already in Britain. Sometimes their whereabouts unknown. But again, the basic principle is we basically need to make life more uncongenial for illegal immigrants in Britain. Across the board, including, of course, in the Channel, and that means detaining and deporting upon arrival within 48 hours, then the French make it. And if we did, then there wouldn't be as much of a pull factor. So I think that to focus on the problem this many steps into it, like once an immigrant gets into Britain, sort of misses the bigger picture, misses the importance of incentives in governing human conduct. And I think that we should be establishing a much more restrictive landscape of incentives that create a credible deterrent and prevent there being any need, preclude any need for there to be any kind of operation fortress and to anger the French and to anger the EU. But also, again, because I regard this as a common civilizational problem in Europe, that there is a case for something like Operation Fortress in the Mediterranean. I'm not going to sort of compose the details of that on the hoof, but I could see it. I could envision a situation in which a base Restore Britain government were to cooperate with our European neighbours in the Mediterranean in order to sort of prevent this problem at source. And the major advantage there, of course, is that you have all of Europe together versus often very rogue North African states and Turkey and the like. So we're sort of we're kind of pooling our sovereignty and pooling our leverage rather than Europeans against each other, which I think is counterproductive this century. That's one advantage of that. And of course, the second advantage is that you are then dealing with the problem at source rather than just zoning in on a particular aspect of the problem, however many steps later between Calais and Dover.
Okay. So to be clear, just to be absolutely clear, something in a wider policy in the Mediterranean, working with all European partners, And, but in the channel, or for the actual channel migrants here, one, that they are all detained as a matter of course immediately and sent back within 48 hours. So I suppose you would need some sort of, there is already big facilities there at Dover, but you'd probably need to expand that, make that bigger, so that they never get into the general population and they're deported again within 48 hours, as well as a whole slew of other policies which make it not good for them to be here. So the incentive is taken away. Would that be all sorts of welfare and things, I suppose?
Welfare, we're talking about sort of e-visas for any foreign workers working in our economy, because obviously legal immigrants wouldn't have access to those. We're talking about debanking. We're talking about right to rent checks. We're talking about right to work checks. Which we're talking about sort of like systematic targeting of HMOs. We're talking about going after known illegal immigrant hotspots like nail shops, like car washes, like kebab shops, like vape shops. You know, we all know where this problem is concentrated. Mm. And yeah, so I mean, this is all spelled out in tremendous detail in our paper of last year, mass deportations, legitimacy, legality, logistics. I know you have a copy, Bo, and I know you've read it.
Yep.
But yes, I'm.
You and Rupert were the senior authors on it, weren't you? So
that's correct.
Head of policy, right? Let's just be clear. Yeah. Anyone who doesn't know.
Yes, effectively, yes. But yes, there is a case of Operation Fortune in the Mediterranean, or something like it. But I don't think there's a. I think it is mere vanity on the part of reform to be pushing that sort of policy in the channel. I don't think it's practical. Although, if we're going to give credit where due, I suppose I would say it's a welcome departure from the kind of more cautious rhetoric that was coming out of reform before Restore Britain's existence. I do think that in many ways they have sort of caught up in terms of rhetoric and in terms of stated ambitions. Like using language in their subtitle as they do, like the invasion of Britain, they're sort of catching up to where we were, I would say, about a year ago.
Okay. Yeah, so something like Operation Fortress in the Mediterranean, there's a few very particular islands, aren't they? Greek and Italian islands. I'm thinking maybe a string of pill boxes, quad-linked 50-cal machine guns. No, is that too much? Have I gone too far?
I can't endorse that.
Moving.
But you do put your finger on a very unfortunate problem. In a way, it would be easier if we were just being invaded by armed flotillas of fighting men, because then you can repel invasions in a more direct way. But the problem is that we are living through a century not of armed conquest, but of unarmed conquest that manipulates our sort of manipulates us psychologically. So we're facing a psychological war, not a military struggle. And it's more smoke and mirrors. And in many ways, it's actually harder to repel an unarmed invasion unless you have the requisite psychological fiber to see it through. The case for repelling an armed invasion makes itself. But the paradox of our time in many ways is that even though we are being invaded, we're constantly needing to make a strong case that we should do something about it.
It is a much, much more insidious thing, isn't it? To have people coming, being invaded by people that are unarmed, claiming to be asylum seekers, claiming to be refugees, fleeing persecution and torture and stuff. That's what they're claiming. When, you know, it's not that, or the vast majority of them is not that. It is cynical and, absolutely. So just to get back to them, to Mr. Farage and his sinking ship, as characterised by the Mirror, they're saying they've decided to go for the angle. Again, they really hate Farage and reform big time. Well, and Restore, but they're saying that it's a lame bid to distract from the woes and sleaze probes. It was in the news yesterday, the news cycle yesterday, that Richard Tice is also, not only is he him and his business been referred to the Met Police, but the Parliamentary Standards Committee, the same, I believe the same body that's investigating Nigel, or will once he wins his by-election against Campion Face, that's also been triggered against Richard Tice as well. For the same sorts of things, similar things, a couple of payments of £250,000 a piece through Fiona Cottrell, Posh George's mum, through Tice's business to reform. And it just seems that the same bit of... It's not sleaze. Sleaze is like sex scandal. I don't know why they're calling financial things sleaze, but okay, they are now. So, I mean, what do you think about... I suppose the key question is, do you think that all these financial scandals will actually take down a Farage and mortally wound or terribly wound one way or another reform? Or do you think it's a storm in a teacup and it's all trumped up charges and it's a complete stitch up job and will come to nothing? What's your feeling?
Yeah, I do think that clearly the establishment, I mean, it's well documented and well known that we at Restore Britain have our differences with reform, both politically and I suppose interpersonally in many respects, not all respects, but in many respects. There's lots of personal vendettas and personal disagreements as well as political ones crisscrossing between our two camps. But it does seem to be very obvious that the establishment is effectively throwing what it can at reform in order to see what sticks. It may be the case that both can you hear me okay, Bo?
Yeah.
It may be the case that both Nigel Farage and Richard Tice have been clumsy and in sort of recording certain payments and the like, particularly when you are setting yourself up as an insurgent party. It behoves you to be extra cautious so that they can't easily find a pretext to take you down. As for the effect that it will have, Americans are not, British people are not identical to Americans in terms of their temperament, but I do find it interesting that the more the establishment in the United States, the deep state in the United States threw at Trump, the more in many ways it endears the American public to him, because it was so brazen. It wasn't just one or two cases thrown at him here and there. There were sort of like hundreds of charges being lodged from all sides. It almost just seemed self-satirizing and absurd at one point. If the establishment overplay their hand here and go after every single irregularity they can find in the personal lives of the senior personnel of reform, it's likely to have a similar effect, I would wager, on endearing the British people to them, or at any rate, making the British people even more staunch in their opposition to the establishment.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, for me personally, despite everything, despite, of course, being a Restore Britain member and partisan, very, very openly, I'm prepared to give reform and Nigel and Tyson the benefit of the doubt. If and when it comes out that it's shown beyond a doubt that they have done something wrong and nefarious, right, well, then I will say so. Then I will jump on the bandwagon of pouring scorn on them and try and win political points off the back of that, legitimately. But until then, I'm absolutely happy to just give them the benefit of the doubt and wait and see. Because it may well be they haven't actually done anything wrong at all, and it's pure Trump-style nonsense. It really is a stitch-up job. I don't know at this point. So I'm prepared to wait for that. But, the Mirror is a classic example. Day after day, it seems, they go after reform as hard as they possibly can, trying to spin things as much as they possibly can. All right, I realise we're already 35 minutes in, so can we talk a bit more about, let's not necessarily talk about just that it's a bit dry and the grass has gone yellow or an individual murder. Should we talk about the pact that's been in the news a bit? Oh, look, the Metro. Something about Bez. Yeah, great journalism. Something about a fat dude that's not as fat anymore. Brilliant. All right. Trump's going to try and help out that FIFA dude. Sure. Important stuff. All right. Let's talk about a little bit about the pact that happened, sort of started playing out on Sunday. Because, of course, you're on the inside of the camp. And it seemed that Nigel, in fact, in this same press conference, it was a press conference he held about the channel and the small boats, But in the Q&A after, of course, almost immediately, people were just asking about that. And I watched it. I watched it all. It's not that long. And he said, Nigel said, in theory, potentially, I'm open to have a conversation. He tried to pour a bit of scorn on Rupert straight away, saying, oh, he's had a bit of a fallout with the Tories, like that. But anyway, but then he said, without addressing the death penalty thing, the demographics thing, the remigration thing, without addressing any of those, he just said, basically said, and I paraphrase, I'm not going to throw the likes of Jenrick and Braverman and Zuhari under the bus. I don't throw people under the bus. I mean, he does. His entire career is littered with people behind him that he's thrown under the bus. But that's what he said. He said, he decided to respond on that one of the 5 points. I'm not going to abandon those people. So, as far as I can tell, as far as I see, at that point, if that is Rupert, genuine Rupert's just a line in the sand, then there's no deal. There's no pact to be made. What do you know? What's all your thoughts and feelings about it? What are you prepared to tell us?
Well, I mean, more or less everything that there is to be said about it is sort of public at this point. I mean, I suppose one of the criticisms we have had and is that we did this publicly rather than privately, and some people have even pointed to the fact that we were very cross with Ben Habib when he tries to sort of throw down the gauntlets against us in public. But as regards making these sorts of overtures privately or publicly, I don't believe personally in a one-size-fits-all solution. You should always do it privately, or you should always do it publicly. And I think these sorts of things need to be judged prudently on a case-by-case basis. And I think one of the reasons why Ben Habib got people's backs up when he was doing it publicly in, I suppose it must have been February, pretty soon after Restore Britain converted from a movement into a party, was that we didn't already have lots of mutual distrust and bad blood with Ben Habib, and so it shouldn't have been particularly complicated for him to just get in touch privately. And the fact that he did it publicly suggests all of a sudden called into question the extent to which we did have that much public that much sort of mutual trust and in one another. And so I suppose that is what we disliked about it. Like, for instance, you and I, Bo, are friends and are known to be friendly towards one another, both publicly and interpersonally. This is known. And so if you said something on, I don't know, I would probably be more likely to get in touch with you privately if I had a problem with you than I would publicly. But it's widely known that Farage and Rupert don't have that. And it would weaken our negotiating hand if we were not making these overtures in public, because part of the reason we're making them in public is because we're trying to say to the reform supporters themselves that reform in its current condition doesn't believe sufficiently in the same things that you believe, which is why we led with the principles rather than the overture itself. And so I think it was a very principled maneuver, as well as one in which, of course, we wanted our hands to be as strong as possible. And, you know, the reform on their hand to be as strong as possible. So I don't think we should be sort of too sort of sentimental and high-minded about these things. We've been sentimental enough in putting the principles first, the 5 principles, pretty non-negotiable as far as we're concerned, not even asking for that much, asking for the bare minimum, particularly as it relates to reversing mass migration and demographic security. I mean, what is the point in the right involving itself in politics at all if all we're going to do is twiddle our thumbs for the next few decades as and while we're overrun demographically beyond saving? I think it's deeply dishonorable, and it dishonors our ancestors and endangers our descendants if, in the time we have left demographically, all we try to do is improve the terms of our own preemptive surrender, which is effectively what the reform is in favor of doing in its current condition, whereas we at Restore Britain are on record saying that we want to ensure demographic security for the native peoples of the British Isles. That isn't even a big ask, in my view. That is the bare minimum. That is sort of the pre-political state of affairs around which everything else should revolve. It shouldn't be regarded as a politicized maneuver at all. So that would be my answer on the public-private criticism that we've got. But I don't know if you have any questions about other aspects of the move that we made on Sunday.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'll just before we go on, I'd just like to completely build on exactly what you said there. For me, I think I said it again yesterday. I say it all the time, actually, almost a broken record. The demographics are the most important thing. everything else, almost everything else, if not everything else about public policy, is downstream of that for me. What's the point in nearly everything else to do with public policy? Housing, transport, health, everything. If it's not our country anymore, if we're a hated and despised and marginalised minority in our own ancestral homeland, it really is the existential question of our age, is demographics and our looming demographic replacement and ultimately annihilation. So it's great to hear Rupert talk about it. It's great to, I wish he would talk about it a lot more, put it front and centre constantly. I would, but okay. So, I mean, it's actually already 22. So, I'd love to have you back on because that went by in a blink of an eye. That felt like about 5 minutes to me. And there's so many things I would like to quiz you about, but I think we've got a sort of wrap it up there, if I'm afraid. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your time, Harrison. Really, really appreciate it. I would love to get you back on if you're prepared to sort of get up in the mornings, because that was really I felt like I asked you 3-4 things maybe. I want to ask you a couple of dozen different things. I'd like to be able to drill down with you about the immigration policy. Really, get the document in front of me. Highlight a few dozen different things that I want complete clarity on and to really pick your brain about. I'd like to do that one morning with you, if you wouldn't mind. That would be great. But
very happy. I've enjoyed this a great deal. When does it go to then? I thought it went until 9 o'clock. Or is that?
Yeah, it does go to.
You do super chats, do you?
Yeah, well, I do. I do on this day in history, and then I do super chats, which usually take half hour or more. And I can't be too late today. Some days I can do an hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes even. But today I can't. I've got to record my history themed show, Bodegas at Epochs. I've got to record that mid morning before the afternoon podcast. So anyway, the recording window today is fairly tight. So, which is a shame, because on another day I could have just kept talking to you if you were willing for another half hour probably. But I'm afraid I can't today, which is a shame. But if you're willing to come back on, I'd love to have you back on.
Send me a text at any time, and I've enjoyed this a great deal. So yeah, let's do it again.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Take care. There you go. Harrison Pitt there. The master of policy at Restore Britain. Of course, Roops gets the final green light and everything, doesn't he? But nonetheless, the policy wonk over at Restore. Great stuff. Great stuff. Okay. Right. Well, as I said, I wasn't making that up about the timeframes today, so we'll have to just crack on. There was one or two other stories of any real... we do our poll. Quickly do our poll. Harry, did you do a poll today? We did. Right, what's our poll today? We had... we've got over 1,000 votes in there. We asked you, would you be in favour of using the military to solve the small boat crisis? And the ayes have it to a remarkable degree. 97% of the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. 97... A cool 97% of you say yes. What's that other 3% doing here? What are they doing here? Agent provocateurs? Lefties? We've got 3% pinkos in the chat. Get out. Go on your bike. Jog on. This isn't a podcast for you. It's not for you. Go away. Get out. Don't go. Don't go. Please don't go. I still love you. We can make this work. I was joking. That was a joke. Don't leave me. 97%. Stonking win. Imagine if you did a national referendum on anything, and you won it 97% to 3%. Amazing. All right. It's just ticked up to 98%. Very close to 1,100 votes on that one. You're my people. All right, let's have a look on this day in history, shall we? What have we got here? Down through the centuries, what happened of note on the 4th of August? In 1555... On this day, the first printing of the Zohar in Spain popularises the Jewish study of Kabbalah. Does it? Don't care. On this day, in 1821, the Russian Antarctic expedition led by Fabian Gottlieb von Bellingshausen, say that 10 times fast, returns to Kronstadt after being the first to circumnavigate Antarctica. Harry. Do you think I've got long-form content talking about the history of man's exploration of Antarctica? On my History Thing show behind the paywall on lotuseaters.com, do consider signing up for as little as £5 a month bronze tier membership. Oh, yeah, it's there. Oh, yeah. And on my own channel, actually. That one. My own history channel, History Bro. Also, independently, more content about Antarctica. Scott of Antarctica and Shackleton. Oh, yeah. And it's interesting to note, isn't it, that it's a fifth of the way through the 19th century before men really sailed up to and around Antarctica. If you believe that narrative of history, some say there were men much earlier, perhaps in the Middle Ages. Some maps from the Middle Ages seem to suggest that they saw the coastline of Antarctica. Nonetheless, the official story of history is that it was the Russians in 1821 that were the first to sail around and really kind of begin to explore Antarctica. I find that remarkable. I would have thought it's earlier than that. It would have been in the 17th, 18th century. No. Or even perhaps even earlier, but no. The 1820s. Okay. On this day in 1914, US President Woodrow Wilson issues his Proclamation of Neutrality to keep the United States out of the war in Europe. Yeah, and of course we know, don't we, that come 1917, some of the German machinations with the Mexicans, as well as a great number of other factors, Woodrow Wilson does eventually get the United States into World War One. It was largely very unpopular in the United States, the idea that they should send over doughboys, they should send over American lads to go and fight in Flanders or wherever, on the Western Front. But by 1917, and for a number of reasons, Woodrow Wilson did eventually get them in. But to begin with, it was deeply unpopular in the United States, and the Prez just slapped a veto on it. Nope. We'll let the Teuton and the Frank annihilate each other, and the Breton. Let the Russians and the Germans and the French and the Austro-Hungarians and the British fight. It's none of our business. There you go. All right. On this day in 1942, the first train carrying Jews departs from Mechelen, Belgium, for Auschwitz. Does it? On this day in 1944, Anne Frank is arrested in Amsterdam by German security police following a tip-off from an informer who is never identified. Oh, that's unfortunate. On this day in 1993, Rwandan Hutus and Tutsis sign a peace treaty in Arusha, Tanzania. Yeah, the Rwandan genocide. I remember that. I wasn't very old. It's one of the things I remember. I was like 12 or something when that happened, about 12. And I remember seeing it on the TV, it all playing out. Crazy thing, it's like Bill Clinton years and Madeleine Albright, they sort of just stepped back and just sort of watched it happen. It played out over just 100 days, I think from like April to early August 1993, where the Hutus massacred the Tutsis. The Tutsis were the minority in that country and had been like the more ruling class. They're two different ethnicities, basically. But the Tutsis generally are sort of taller and sort of more long-limbed, got like longer fingers, and the Hutus are sort of more squat, shorter. You can see, usually not always, but you can see the sort of the difference between the two peoples. And the Tutsis were in the minority and sort of the more ruling elite, ruling class caste, and the Hutus had claimed they'd sort of oppressed them for generations and generations, and in the end, well, went berserk and massacred like 800,000 of them. Odd. Who knows? There's no real number. In the space of 100 days. Killing any Hutus as well that got in the way. Any moderate ones. Quite often, because I mentioned the Tutsis had like, they were like sort of taller and longer limbed and had longer fingers. One of the things they did, if they didn't kill you, is they'd get a machete and chop off all their fingers. Leave you with just stumps. It's like the longer fingers were like a sign of your, of being a Tutsi. Oh, it's terrible. Really, like insanely brutal. Most of it done on the roadside with machetes. The horror. rest of the world sort of stood aside and was like, oh dear, that just happened. All right, okay, that's on this day in history. It's nearly 10 to. I do want to try and finish by sort of bang on 9 if I can, unfortunately. Shame that Harrison came on today, of all days, when I haven't got effectively endless time. Okay, let's look at our Rumble Rants. Do you think Mr. Global Church History will be in at number one? Yes, he is. Yes. Reigning, defending, and still champ of Bodade's Rumble Rants. Global Church History. Oh, the first two are Global Church History. All right, what have we got? What factoids has he given us today? They're usually good ones, aren't they? All right, he says, today in 70 BC, Cicero... Ooh, Cicero factoid. Cicero began his legendary case against Verres. I reckon I've got long-form content, a fair few hours, talking all about the life of Cicero. Marcus Tullius Cicero, Tully to his friends. Yeah, oh yeah, it's there, it's all there. Yeah. Just on Cicero, yeah. Yeah, that case, 70 BC, so that's post-Sulla. It's after the Sullan era. But it's before the true rise of Caesar, it's before the triumvirate, first triumvirate, isn't it? So Pompey would be the first man in Rome at that point. Anyway, Verres, yeah, he was sort of one of the corrupt governors, proconsul type. Was he a proconsul? Anyway, he was a governor of, is it Sicily? I can't remember off the top of my head exactly. I think it might be Sicily. Anyway, he came back to Rome after his term was up. Was it Sardinia? Anyway, and he was prosecuted for corruption, basically. He was protected from up on higher. He's protected by all the most powerful, very, very powerful clique in Rome. It's quite dangerous to prosecute him. You could find yourself dead in a ditch for daring to do so. But Cicero did it. Because at least at that point in his life, he seemed to have been fearless, politically fearless. Later in his life, not so much. But anyway, it's an interesting one. And that was on this day. That was on this day in 70 BC. Interesting. I'm a big fan of Cicero's life. Very, very interesting life. Okay, and the second factoid we've got here from Global Church History says, on this day in 1693 AD, Dom-Pierre Perignon perfected the double fermentation process crucial to the development of champagne. Oh, interesting. Yeah. I think there's, Connections, James Burke's Connections. Have you ever seen that? I think late 70s, early 80s TV show. It holds up brilliantly. It's sort of a set of documentaries about the history of science. I think he talks about that at one point, and it's sort of, he does it very, very well. It's very interesting. If I could recommend anything to anyone, James Burke's Connections. The show is called Connections. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he talks about double fermentation in that. And how it's important. Loads of other things lead on from that. Once you do that, that's the way science always goes. You find one small little new leap forward, and it might not even be obvious of how that's of any use. Turns out, generations later even, that it's the cornerstone of a whole swathe of new science and industry. Okay, the other one, next one, Global Church History again says, happy birthday, Gibraltar. On this day in 1704... we captured Gibraltar from the Spanish. Most inhabitants left except for 70 Genoese. Genoese was spoken until the 20th century. Right, so that would be 1704. That's the Spanish Civil War. I think I've got long form content talking all about the Spanish... Not Spanish Civil War. The War of the Spanish Succession. I've got long form content about the Spanish Civil War as well of the 30s. You want to hear about the Franco-Spanish Civil War of the 30s or... the War of the Spanish Succession in the early 18th century. They're both there. Go for your life. Okay, yeah, we captured Gibraltar. And we just still hold it to this day. Okay, next one. Fallen Firebird. Question for Harrison. Oh, he's gone, I'm afraid. There's a question for Harrison or food for thought for Beau. Okay. How would Restore deal with migrant civil violence and insurrection that would inevitably erupt at some degree when deportation policies begin? Yeah, that's a really important question, isn't it? Really, really important question. one that would, if we are to do a mass program, a forced remigration, that would be one of the key issues around it all, wouldn't it? Yeah. Have to increase the police, use the army, make a new civil defence force, God knows what. There'd be, it would have to be looked at with extreme detail and figured out properly, wouldn't it? Yeah. Very, very good question. Very pertinent question. Yeah. Because a lot of them are not going to want to go. And in fact, I talked about it last week, didn't I? At least in passing. That very often we find that a migrant does their an atrocity, does a mass casualty event, once they've been told that they are going to be deported and that their asylum claim is over and they are going to go back to their country of origin. That is when, that's the window of time statistically very often when they do something unbelievably violent. Yeah. Personally, I would detain people once their asylum claim has been rejected. At that point, they're detained. They're not allowed in the general public at that point. Because of that, exactly because of that, yeah. Would we need loads more facilities and resources and money spent on making that a reality? Yeah, almost certainly, yeah. Okay, and the last rubber rant today is from Fallen Firebird, who says, a not-so-fun fact, Bo. Those Arusha Accords, were actually before the Rwandan genocide. The RPF waged a guerrilla civil war, then peace was made for a bit. Only then did the genocide break out in 94. Oh, fair enough. Sorry, have I got it slightly wrong? Fair enough. Oh, good point. Thanks for pointing that out. Thank you, genuinely. If I ever get something wrong like that, factually wrong, please do point it out. I'm happy to be corrected. So yeah, okay, good. Genuinely, thanks for that. So correction for the record. I slightly misunderstood the factoid on this day in history about the Rwandan genocide. I thought that was the piece at the end of the genocide, and Fallen Firebird saying no, that's not quite right. Okay. Happy to be corrected. One more Rumble Ranch just come in from Pigdog5150 saying, ban halal burqa, call to prayer, fine. Why not outright ban the cult? I can't read the next thing, not because I don't want to, because there's T's and C's on YouTube and Thought Police. If I read out what you put there, the channel and myself personally would be in trouble. Now, I don't care about too much about myself, but I'm not prepared to get this channel struck or demonetized or completely yeeted. It's my job not to do that. So thanks for the rumble rant, Pigdog 5150, but I can't finish reading that. Bear that in mind. If anyone wants to send in a super chat, bear in mind there's T's and C's on YouTube. Yeah? And I'm in England and they arrest people for saying things that are too spicy. Obviously too spicy. Okay, alright. Moving on. The YouTube ones. We've got about a dozen here. Maybe a few more. Alright. Stu K8P. He's been in the number one for a few days in a row here. He's the YouTube equivalent of Global Church History. You've got to get up real early in the morning, literally, to beat Stu K8P. He says, Prime Minister to build new homes. We spelt it like Eamon Holmes, not homes. To build new homes. Isn't one enough, Burnham? Eamon's done enough damage, hasn't he? Joking. Eamon Holmes is completely innocent, has done nothing wrong. Get well soon, Eamon. It's just a silly in-joke on this channel where I accidentally confused you with Hugh Edwards one time. Completely in good faith, genuinely just said the wrong name. And now it's an in-joke on this channel that you, Eamon Holmes, is guilty of all sorts of things that you're obviously not. It's a dark joke. Get well soon, mate. I really mean that. Okay, Jamie Lee Heavenhole says, early release, why is Alex Belfield so dangerous? Oh, Alex Belfield. You know, I've sort of followed Alex Belfield's story a bit on and off. Not religiously every time there's an update on what's going on. But on and off, I like History Debunked covers it a fair bit, doesn't he? And Belfield himself and his channel, various other people talk about it, don't they, from time to time. I've sort of followed it a bit, a fair bit. And I always thought, oh, he hadn't done anything really wrong and it was a stitch-up. But when he did go to prison in the first instance, it did look like, although something of a stitch-up, he was found guilty of, like, malicious communications and a whole bunch of things, really. So, all right, I don't know the details in fantastic, to a fantastic degree, so, all right, it is what it is. But then it does seem to me, again, I don't know all the details, but it does seem to me that when he was sent back to prison recently, that does seem completely unfair. Like, he hadn't done any, seemed to me he hasn't done anything wrong. He wanted to go to a Tommy rally, didn't he? Or didn't he want to go to a Rupert? He wanted to go to a Restore thing. And the police were just like, no, back in prison you go. That's the thing, when you get the eye of Sauron truly on you, and they decide they're going to throw the book at you. And you may have done actually something a little bit wrong. May have, I don't know, but... In Bowes Britain, someone like Alex Belfield would not have faced as harsher punishments as he has. If he's done something truly malicious in the first place, like truly sort of hounding someone, I think that's what they claimed, didn't they? Wasn't it a BBC reporter claimed he truly hounded him and caused him sort of psychological distress and stuff? If all that was true, then okay, that's not good. That's a crime. But usually, I would have thought... You should be allowed to say what you want within reason. Like harsh criticisms. Okay. Alex Belfield. You ask, why is he so dangerous? He's not dangerous, is he? That's the thing. He's not dangerous. Probably couldn't punch his way out of a wet paper bag. He's not dangerous, is he? All right, Chunky. Let's get on to the next one. LJNV says, Bowen Harrison, you magnificent men. I think the biggest thing for change is changing the world view of normies and having them understand the emotional manipulation that has taken place since World War II. Yeah. If a patriotic nativist government is to ever come into existence, you need to win over the millions of normies. If you're to win a couple of hundred, 300 seats in Parliament, that requires millions of normies to vote for you. That's the game. That's the whole ball game. Yeah. So do share this and other content like this, adjacent to this, to normie people you know. Try and wake them up and get them to realise that we're staring down the barrel of demographic replacement, and that's an existential threat. We need a party that's going to do re-migration. If millions must go, then millions must go. Aim high, vote low. All right. Daniel D. King says, perhaps we could make illegal entry or facilitating it punishable by death. Try to return them, but keep the option open. Well, feel like the death penalties quite a high bar. In all honesty, we joke, don't we? I on Twitter talk about the gibbet for every tiny little thing. Well, you stole a sausage roll from Greg's, right? That's the gibbet. You jaywalked. That's a hanging. Joking, being silly. In all honesty, perhaps a death penalty is a bit much for that, but certainly a stiff penalty. Certainly be deported. There's no two ways about that. But bring back the death penalty in general. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. So I'm so unbelievably in favour of that. And Restore's policy. That's one clear light between Reform and Restore is the death penalty. Nigel said no. And Rupert said yes. For certain crimes. You know, like the Southport killer. The death penalty. Yep. All right. Calzetti just says, clear them out in all capitals. Clear them out. We've got to clear them out. Bowden style. Yes. Yes. Tiger, spelt T-Y-G-R-8, says, bring back gladiatorial arenas. and have the trespassers earn their freedom. French Foreign Legion uses the same principle. It's a bit elaborate. I'll just deport them. Funny idea, though. Funny idea. All right, the last few I'll whip through because I've got to get going this morning, I'm afraid. Emily Forrestor says, love this man, Pitt for PM. Harrison for PM. B, get Martin Selner on to discuss his remigration and the Save Europe Act. Our continental bros and sisters are waking. I'll speak to him for sure. Yeah, absolutely. If he was interested. Emily Forrestor again says, the oxymoron of a fighting age male refugee. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The oxymoron of it. The juxtaposition, not juxtaposition, the obvious nonsense that is. Yeah. WolfX1789 says, Harrison and Charlie are the future. Yeah, I think so. God bless you, Bo, and the Restore lads. Remigration is truly inevitable, and it becomes more obvious every day. Yeah, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. It must happen. Kiefer Brown, 1337, says, Bo considers himself a serious political analyst, yet failed to ask Harrison the most basic questions about Restore's policy on Eamon Holmes. Sad. I thought I was going to really get it in the neck there. I thought that was a genuine criticism there. Like, well, as I said to him, not making it up, I'd love to get him back on and just talk about, get the document, reread it, and drill into various things, exactly things I don't like, and things I don't think are strong enough, and drill down to it. Why this? Why that? Why not this or that? But yeah, that's an Eamon Holmes joke. Yeah, so. Sorry, on the pile. All right, and the last one here. Marcos 888 says, vote low, cheers, Bo, millions must go. Exclamation mark, all capitals. We're going to take our country back. Don't be downhearted. Don't be disheartened. Don't be a doomer. It's only a few million third worlders that we can deport. It's possible. It's eminently possible. Keep the faith. All right, that's the show. It's now 9:08 in the AM on Tuesday, the 4th of August, in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. You've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. It really isn't a thing without you guys. It really isn't. Thank you for watching. You're basically the best people on earth. Impeccable taste. Certainly got impeccable taste watching The Bo Show live. Breakfast with Bo. All right, try and make the best of the day ahead. Your time is the most valuable thing you will ever have. By orders of magnitude, any gold and silver and gems and houses and cars you've owned and collected, can't take any of that with you. It's of no true value at the end of the day. Your time is, and it's finite. Try and make it count if you can. All right, I don't want to be too preachy about it. Until tomorrow morning, take care.
Hey, it is Ryan Seacrest here. Want to bring a little Hollywood excitement to your day? Take a few spins with Chumba Casino's brand new game, Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways. It's free and features 10,000 ways to play, giving you nonstop action, including thrilling bonus respins and cascading reels. Every spin brings something new, so step into the spotlight, enjoy the excitement, and play today at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.